do go up on the internet. A supporter puts them up at DharmaPunks NYC at podbean.com. So it's about 100 talks I've given with alone and with other teachers over the years. So if you're interested in hearing on specific topics, you can go there. Okay, so tonight, there's an old saying that you've probably heard this, that old wives' tale or whatever, that tragedies come in threes.
Mm-hmm.
Probably heard that at some point. This idea that when one or two famous celebrities kicks the bucket, you should be racing to CNN because inevitably a third will. And on the converse, you know, or along those lines, certainly there are times when we start to experience, or it seems that a lot of people in our lives are dying or getting sick or having tragedies. Then there are other times in life where we can experience, perhaps we go through a breakup, and then you walk around and it seems that everybody's in a happy relationship. Or perhaps we might become concerned about money, and then we notice it seems that everybody's rich. Or we feel alienated at work, and it seems that everybody's got a great career but us. So what is going on? What the fuck's happening? Well, this is actually a manifestation, sort of an obvious manifestation of what the Buddha called loka, L-O-K-H-A. Loka, what the Buddha, or what is commonly now translated as the world. The idea being that the world as we perceive it, everybody else out there, what's going on outside of us, is this large projection of our insecurities and our desires, our fears and our frustrations. We don't have an objective view of what's going on out there in reality. The Buddha said that the mind is the author of everything we experience. It filters and distorts and creates its own reality. This, by the way, is now not a large claim. In fact, even a first-year student who's studying towards neuroscience or psychology will tell you that the mind is not set up to accurately portray the outside world. It never was the mind's intention. The mind is set up, the brain is set up, to do a couple of things. It's to keep your ass alive, fed, long enough that you will reproduce. And that's pretty much it. That's what the agenda is. The mind is actually, or the brain, is actually a organ of the body that is there to ensure our survival. It's not there to ensure that we accurately represent reality. That's not high on survival of the species lists of to-dos. Now, of course, if we live in a complete daydream, we're bumping around into the furniture, we're seeing monsters where there are cats or whatever, then we won't live very long. So we do have, there is a correlation between what we experience and what's going on out there. But it's one of the primary mistakes that people make when they start studying Buddhism is they read the Buddha's very, very early statements, 2,000 years, 2,500 years before neuroscience, where the Buddha said that all things, the world included, are fabrications of the mind, and that they are, in essence, illusions. It's tempting to think, okay, well, certainly the Buddha must be saying, if I practice a lot, if I meditate a lot, if I get really calm and good and virtuous, that I'll start seeing the world objectively. Unfortunately, it's not really the case. The mind never gets to a place where it sees a completely undistorted representation of the world. But what the Buddha does promise is that the amount of distortions that we do experience will be far less, and B, the amount of stress and suffering and anxiety that comes about by these incredible distortions of the world that the mind creates will be lessened. Of course, when we go through a breakup, everybody is not suddenly in a relationship. There are many people who aren't. Of course, when we feel struggling for money, not everybody is a yuppie who's rich. That's just not the case. Of course, when we experience death, not everybody is dying. Some of these distortions are, or these perceptions, I should say, sannas, S-A-N-N-A-S, is in the Buddha's tongue, sometimes they can be useful. For instance, the perception of, oh my God, a lot of people are dying around me, is not as scary a thing as we generally suppose, because even though it's a sad thought, it can be used to spur us on to prioritize our lives. Sometimes we get so caught up in the little dramas of work, the little affairs of between our friends, or little dramas and relationships, that we forget, oh my God, we've only got a certain amount of time, none of which is guaranteed. And when we realize, oh yes, I am living in a frail human shell, maybe the things I've been focusing on the mind aren't really that worthwhile, that can be skillful. Most of the time, these sort of globalizing perceptions don't bring a lot of usefulness. They can actually cause a lot of suffering. For example, as I said, when we're going through career anxiety, and it seems that everybody has a great career but us, this everybody but me type view isolates us, makes us feel unique, makes us feel different, makes us feel that we can't relate or share with other people what's going on, or that other people won't understand us. And of course, the Buddha said that everything of importance that we experience in life is universal. There's nothing particularly unique about my suffering, my aging, my sickness, my loss, my grief, my separation, my anxieties. The content may be a little different from one person to another, but we all have those basic same emotions. We've all experienced abandonment and loss and grief and disappointment. So this idea that when the mind thinks, ooh, everybody else is happy but me, that is not a useful perception. And yet it's one of the first things that pops up, isn't it? When we go through a breakup or we go through a lost job, it's the first thing the mind loves to do. Oh, everybody else, there's something broken about me, but everybody else knows the ticket. Everybody else has got it set up. So there's a couple of things to bear in mind when we look at this phenomenon. The first is that these perceptions arise because of the way we focus the mind and the amount of emotion that we experience when we focus the mind. I'll break that down. The Buddha said that the mind is a causal machine. Basically, the happiness and the misery we experience are caused by the way we use our minds. They're not primarily, our stress and suffering is not caused by the outside world. It's actually caused by the way we relate to our experiences in life. If I focus a lot on things that are uncertain, if I try to control things that are beyond my control, if I am constantly suspicious, I will live in that mind. I will create a mind that's suspicious, a mind that is constantly needing to control what it can control. I'm creating my mind every time I use my mind. I'm creating its future states. Every action or every intentional thought is like a seed that I'm planting that can grow into a future mind state. If I worry about what people think about me in the future, out of the blue, I'm going to have suspicious thoughts. Those are the flowerings of what I've done with my mind right now. Those are the things that grow out of the seeds I plant. So it's really important to beware or be aware of how you are using your mind, because that is going to determine what kind of mind you live in the future. The question is often asked, how do I tell what is an intention or karma, something that's planting something, versus a result in the mind? And it's a very, at the beginning it's very difficult to tell, but over time you can really tell. If I'm really focusing and being very intentional with my mind, that is something that's planting a seed. If, however, it's just a thought that pops up out of the blue with no intention, it's like suddenly I'm in a dream world or suddenly I'm beset by anxieties, that's what's known as vipaka. It's the result of a previous thought or previous action of mine. So, but the point is, notice how we're focusing the mind. But more important than that, they found that, especially in great clinical research, the amount of emotion, or what the Buddha called vedana, this sort of gut response that we have to life, creates a lot of the perceptions that we live in the future. For example, I'll give you a wonderful study. They found that when people go through horrendous car crashes, they did this study where they gave people who were in these horrible, horrible accidents beta blockers right after them. Now, beta blockers have absolutely no cognitive effect. They don't change your thoughts. They're not, you know, they don't have GABA in them. They're not benzos. All they do is stop you from having the physical parts of a panic attack. They don't change anything about your thoughts. You can work any job pretty much with a, you know, in fact, a lot of musicians, when they have stage fright, take beta blockers so that they won't have the physical manifestations of a panic attack. Now, they found that when they give beta blockers to people who have had car accidents, they don't have post-traumatic stress disorder. They don't have those future experiences where they constantly expect something horrible to happen. Their perceptions of the world aren't altered because they physically have stayed relaxed during or right after the traumatic event. But the people that they didn't give the beta blockers to almost invariably wound up having post-traumatic stress disorder effects. They suddenly had fight or flight, they would break down, they would expect out of the blue, horrible events to occur. They would freeze. They would suddenly start to hyperventilate. They would start sweating uncontrollably. In fact, the difference was so marked that eventually they just abandoned the study and gave everybody beta blockers after they had horrible accidents, so long as their blood pressure wasn't too low. You can't give it to people with very low blood pressure. But because it was so marked, the difference. So, in life, when we're experiencing something, if we stay very calm and relaxed, for instance, if we are going through something that can be normally trigger us, we're still present. We're still taking it in. We're still being there for other people. But if we can at least ground part of the body, the chances of us living in future distortions and suffering are greatly diminished. Now, that's easier said than done, no? When we go through a breakup, when we go through a loss or something like that, it's very tempting to get agitated and for the mind to fixate on it and for the body to become all contracted and suddenly and all tight. To some degree, this is inevitable, but we do have some input to it. We do have some ability to control what the mind focuses on. We can keep the mind just large enough that it doesn't collapse around one perception. For instance, these are where the Buddha's reflections come in very helpful. If we go through a lost job, a breakup, through a calamity or a tragedy, if we just live in, oh my God, I've lost my job, that collapsing around that subject is going to create a mind that feels very uncertain in the future and living from a place of loss and from a place of not having. But if we keep the mind reflecting also on gratitude, that's one of the things, gratitude for things that we've done that are skillful, that people have done for us, generosity, how can even, no matter what, how little I have, how can I help a friend or help someone? If we focus on virtue, no matter how much we're living in a sense of being deprived of something, if we can at least reflect on the fact that we didn't lie, we didn't take it out on someone else, we didn't try to hurt someone, if we focus on the positives rather than just the loss, we keep the mind balanced. We're still there. We're still experiencing the fact we've been through a breakup, we've lost a job, we've experienced a tragedy, but we've not allowed the mind to do what the Buddha calls tamayata, shrink around a subject and live inside of that single perception in the future. So it's very important to practice the reflections. I'll give you some of the reflections there. Gratitude, virtue, generosity, reflections on the Dhamma, reflections on the Sangha, that there are other people in your life that are trying to practice skillfully, reflections on the peace that you've developed in your life, whether through meditation or through other skillful things, so that you know that peace is still available to you no matter what you're going through. Another important thing, you notice that when I said at the beginning that when we leave the meditation, we should bring that body awareness and that peace that we've cultivated internally with us. This is called mindfulness. One of the things that separates the Buddha's teachings from the yogis of his time, where the yogis basically prioritized meditation, and when they left meditation, there was not really in place a practice that would keep people in that state of peace and concentration and calmness. The Buddha added a lot of teachings to the yogis, and one that he did was this concept of sati or mindfulness, this idea that even when we're not meditating, we keep some of our awareness on the body, noting where we generally get tight and tense and stressed out, so that as we move through life, especially when we're going through difficult times, we notice when we start tensing up. I notice my stomach and my shoulders primarily. And when I see them tightening up, especially when I'm going through anything that's at all disturbing, an argument, if I have to go through a difficult interpersonal experience, or if I'm going through a difficult thing at work, or I feel there's a lot on my plate, I make sure to keep the body relaxed. Because, again, with the study of the beta blockers, the more relaxed we keep the body, the less likely we're going to be living in the shadowy aftermath of a bad experience. We still experience it, but there's not the sense of the unavoidable aftershocks, as you were, to an emotional experience. So, and three, the third thing to work with is it's very important in general to have some form of a daily practice where you stop and you let go, you jump outside of whatever story you're living in. There's such a temptation to carry around our financial worries, our relationship worries, our work worries, our family worries, our worries about the future, to carry these narratives with us all the time. And the more we carry them with us, the more we are creating a mind that we're going to have to live in the future. That might not be the mind we want to live in. For example, one of the things I used to hear when I was in school was people saying, yeah, I'm just going to work in the stock market for a few years, make my fortune, and then I'm going to get out. And then I'm going to do something really good for the world, or then I'm just going to live on the beach or whatever. And you meet these people 20 years later, and they're not doing anything of the sort because they can't let go. Because they're living in that mind that has to constantly have an edge, that has to be accumulating more, that has to be betting more, that has to be in more and more drama. This illusion that we can live in a drama and then step away from it and not be in that mind for quite a while, it's not going to happen. So the break that meditation gives us is not only important because we're doing innumerable good for the body when we meditate. I mean, the effect on the blood pressure, cardiovascular problems are alleviated to some extent. There's the improvement of the reduction of cortisol, the control we have over the firing, the amygdala, all that stuff. I mean, I could go on forever about the benefits of meditation, but beyond that, there is one or a number of noticeable or notable benefits, and one of them is we disrupt the living in a drama. And when we disrupt this living in a drama for a while, we give ourselves perspective. We literally give ourselves a doorway for a while out. And it increases the speed or decreases the time that it takes for the tragedies in life to pass. I've been through deaths without meditation, and I've been through deaths of friends, close friends, parents, with meditation, and I can tell you that I'm still there, I'm still present, I'm still showing up, and I'm still feeling the loss, but the amount of unnecessary disruption and drama and distortions that I live in the aftermath are greatly reduced the more I can give myself a period in each day where I can literally step outside of whatever story I'm living in and just become present for a while and just get in touch with the rest of life. There's an old Chinese saying that if we pull a leaf very close to our eyes, the leaf can seem bigger than the moon because we're holding it that close. And that's what happens when we live in a drama. We're holding it so close that it can seem bigger than everything else, and suddenly we're living in that story. We're living in everybody's happy but me, or everybody's knows how to be a great this or that but me. And so we want to constantly pull that story away for at least a little while every day. So anyway, that's tonight's talk. I hope you got something out of it. Three ways to protect the mind from living in traumatic perceptions. And now it's...